Live from legendary Music Row in Nashville, Tennessee, Sam Ash Music proudly presents two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. It's Scott and Hino and the Music Row Show.
All right. Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show, brought to you this hour by our very good friends at Sam Ash Music Stores. My name's Scott.
And I'm Hino. Thanks so much for tuning in again tonight. This show is for all you songwriters and musicians and performers out there across the country trying to find your path to success here in good old Music City.
That's right. Now, we don't actually have any answers.
Nope.
We don't know a darn thing. We're out slinging songs at night just like you are and, just trying to make it work. But we have been fortunate enough to find this venue to be able to bring in the right people and ask them questions and allow you to call or email in and ask your questions.
That's right. So you can chime in by calling 800-688-9522, or if you're a little bit shy and don't want to hear your voice on the air, just send us an email at mail@themusicrowshow.com and we'll get it right here.
There are a lot of shy songwriters out there.
You never know.
There might be.
You know?
And
other people do the singing, you know?
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, hey, and by the way, if you call or email, you're automatically entered to win in our February giveaway, which is a great, great prize. You're getting a 100 CD replication package from our good buddies over at Earmark Digital.
And they do fabulous work, too.
Yeah. I just did a CD with them, and they helped me do all the artwork and the whole – I mean, they did the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
So soup to nuts. You bring them the music, and they'll put it in a CD for you. They do amazing work. Check them out. I think we have a banner ad on our website, right?
That's right. You just go to our website and click on their banner. I think they're also at earmarkdigital.com.
So right.
Makes it easy. Now, you know what? We know there's a game on.
What?
Yeah, there's a game on, you know. But tell you what, turn down the sound because we've got a terrific lineup for y'all tonight. We've got Lisa Ashman and Annie Roboff both live in the studio tonight.
That's right. And actually, this works out perfectly because our show's starting right at halftime.
Perfect. Who wants to watch Bruce Springsteen anyway?
Who?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, couldn't get him on the show. So, no, tonight's going to be a hoot. But before we get going, let's take a few minutes to talk about this hour's sponsor, Sam Ash Music Stores.
Yeah, you know what? The new catalog. So far has been kept under wraps.
That's right.
I'm really excited to see it because all the new NAMM stuff is going to be in there. NAMM is the big musical instrument convention that happens twice a year actually, but the big one just happened a couple weeks ago, and all the manufacturers have their new gizmos and new guitars and new everything else, and a lot of that I bet you is going to be in the new Sam Ash catalog.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what Samson has in store for 2009. You know, I've been playing with that new H2 today. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I was actually it sounded, I hate saying this, but it sounded like a lot of my guitar vocal demos I've done around this town, and it's just this little dinky digital recorder.
Shh, Scott, that's crazy talk.
I know, but it was really great. So,
I'm going to have to hear that. That sounds great.
Absolutely.
Well, you know what? Sam Ash is a great place to find all the new hot gear from Samson or Larrivée, our favorite guitars, Yamaha, Tama, you name it, they've got it.
Well, and next time you're in your local Sam Ash store, thank them for sponsoring the Music Row Show.
Absolutely, absolutely. We love working with those guys, and you know what? I think you will too. If you don't have a store near you, just log on to their website, which is samash.com, and there you go. If you can't remember that, go to our website, themusicrowshow.com, and we've got a nice big banner up there.
If you can't remember samash.com, come over and let us smack you in the back of the head.
Okay.
But we're happy to have you go onto our website,
That's
too.
Right. So, Scott, let's get cranking here. Why don't you introduce tonight's guest?
I would love to. Lisa Ashman has written or co-written thousands of songs with some of the most creative and successful writers and artists all over America. Her music has appeared in film, television, musical theater, country, R&B, contemporary Christian, Latin, and adult contemporary radio formats. She has written a book on creativity exercises for songwriters called 1,000 Songwriting Ideas that I highly recommend this book, by the way. I love reading it. And we're excited to visit about with her. But wait, there's more, because Lisa also has a special place in Hino's heart, which she may or may not remember, because she's had a huge impact on his life as well, which I'm sure we'll be delving into shortly. But Lisa Ashman, welcome to the Music Row Show.
Yeah.
We're glad you're here.
That's right. Now, we're going to have to talk to you about that later. No, actually, Scott alluded to the fact that I met my wife at one of Lisa's birthday parties years ago. It was at your house, and you know, I was there, she was there, and the rest is history, as they say. So, and I think you were even there the night I proposed to her at the Bluebird.
Yes,
so, I mean,
I was.
Just came full circle. There you go.
Wow.
Well, so, you know, I'm wondering how somebody, and it's pretty well known that you don't play any instruments, yet you're this big successful songwriter, which is pretty awesome. So how does somebody who doesn't play an instrument break into songwriting? How did that happen?
Well, my start in songwriting is quite a story. I wrote my first song in a hospital waiting between surgeries, and the blanket
really?
Was white and the walls were white and I was bored out of my gourd. And I wrote a song, silly little novelty song called Pies Don't Cry. And I also wrote a list of the things that I liked, that I enjoyed, if nobody was watching or telling me that I was good at this and I ought to do this. I tried to think of things that I would do that made me happy. And I wrote on my list swimming, lying on the beach, singing, dancing, reading, and writing. And I swore if I ever got out of that hospital that I would do more of those things on that list and less of everything else. And I was out and I was looking for the bathroom in Chuck's Cellar, which was a restaurant in Mountain View, California. And there was an open mic happening in the basement. And I said, what are you doing? And they said, well, we're the Songwriters Association. And this is an open mic. And what you do is you sign your name here and you go sing a song you've written. Have you written a song? And I said, well, one. And I walked up on stage and I sang it a cappella. And I won their contest.
Get out.
And
wow.
The bartender took me to another bar and he pointed to the band. And he said, have you ever wondered where people get their songs? And I said, no, all the songs I know are folk songs. And he said, well, people write them for a living. And I thought, my list, there really is a job you could do where you could be swimming, lying on the beach, singing, dancing, reading, and writing for a living.
All in one?
Wow.
And then 3 years later, I got a ticket to the Los Angeles Songwriters Showcase Expo. And I went around with this piece of paper and had the industry booths people stamp it, stuck it in the box, and I won the grand prize of the raffle, which was 4 hours of free studio time. And I took a song I had written called Tu Con Él, which was a song I wrote in my gringa Spanish, just to see if I could. I took it to David Vasquez, who happened to own the studio, and he recorded it. I brought it back to the expo, and there was a fellow from Mexico City there who had an artist who was interested in the song. And so I got my first cut and my first demo all for free, all at once. Boom. I thought it was going to be easy.
That's how it works all for everybody,
wow.
Right?
Wow.
Yeah.
My gosh, what a great... Now, how old were you when you had
35.
This... How old?
35.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Man, oh man.
And how many songs have you written?
I've written maybe 6,000.
Oh, man. I got a lot of work to do.
Oh, man. Man, so what, do you write a song a day or two songs a day? Or
about an average of a song a day, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's amazing. So how do you, since you don't, I'm curious about how this works, since you don't have a you know, you don't use an instrument when you write, do you, by nature, are you forced then to co-write a lot, to do the chord structures and all that sort of thing, or how do you work that part of it?
Well, I'm not forced to. I like to co-write. Yes, I think sometimes of my own arrangements, and then I'll check and see whether whether that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have my co-writers arrange them. But I'm often writing melody.
Okay.
Just singing it, and I also have done a number of other wacky things to generate music. I got a a courtesy account at CARMA, Center for Computer Research and Music and Acoustics at Stanford. And they had a dedicated hardware system called the Foonly, which was 134 waveform generators, and they generated a whole bunch of amazing music software and hardware. And I would do digital signal conditioning that was basically math on various waveforms. And I would, you know, I would say things like, okay, attack parameter, you know, decay parameter for this signal is such and such, you know, and this frequency and da da da. And then I would work out things having to do with digital filters and Fourier transforms and, you know, all this stuff that really boiled down to thinking about sound just mathematically in terms of complex analysis and stuff.
Man.
And so that was another an example of another weirdo way into generating music.
Yeah.
That I did. I had this courtesy account, and I could play with this machine between about midnight and dawn. And so I would go up there to this this facility associated with Stanford University and mess around. And and that was another way that I was able to generate some classical style stuff.
Yeah. Well, the reason I ask this is because I have some friends who are in the same boat. You know, they write, but they don't really play anything. How do you go about when you have a melody or some, you know, you've got the thing in your head, you know, and how do you communicate that to somebody else? Because, you know, you can take a melody and put 1,000 different chords underneath it and it'll sound 1,000 different ways.
Right.
Well, how do you communicate what you're hearing in your head?
Well, sometimes... you know, a chord chart in Nashville notation works. sometimes it's a matter of going,
okay.
That one.
I like that.
Yeah. I mean, some of it's that too. And, I owe a lot to all kinds of musicians who've over the years made an awful lot of music with and for me. Yeah. I was going to tell you some other things. I've had opportunities to work with Band in a Box and some other things that that generate chords. Anyway, there one time I sang all the parts to a piece of music called Be Small, and Barry Fosman had some software, and he would input it, and I would create line for line. I sang the flute part first, and then the strings combined, and then an oboe part, and so on. And I built this whole thing up vocally.
Wow.
And in some cases, some of the parts would have to be contrapuntal and stuff. And so what I would do is I would sort of stagger it, and sometimes I would have to sing slower than the instrument could play. I've sung horn parts, for instance, trumpet parts, where you know you need to go faster than the human voice can.
Wow. Well, we need to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more Lisa Ashman. You're listening to The Music Row Show.
Nice.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with Lisa Ashman. Hey, before we get back with Lisa, I do want to talk about the fact that we have Little Richard in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Is playing at the Opry House and
on Valentine's
on
night.
On Valentine's night at the Opry House. They were nice enough to ask Heino and I to MC that event. We're going to be honored to be there. But you can buy tickets. I just had someone ask me, "Oh, do they still have tickets?"
Yes, they do.
What kind of what's a better Valentine's gift than listening to Little Richard and Little Anthony and the Imperials,
who just got inducted into the Rock and Roll
Hall? That's right.
Yeah.
At the Opry House. So it's going to be amazing. Log on to opry.com to get your tickets. And we're here with Lisa Ashman, and I don't want to beat this a cappella thing with the stick here, but I do have to tell you that back when we were in Orange Beach, we played your we saw one of your performances, and you said, "Well, I don't play an instrument, so I'm going to sing a cappella." And I'm going to be honest, my wife just went, "Oh boy."
Yeah.
Oh. And you started, and she looked at me and she goes, "I love her." And she still talks about you. It really was a fantastic thing for her. So I guess, is it a, once, you know, so you've had so much success writing, has it been a conscious decision since that you don't want to learn an instrument? You're happy doing everything the way you're doing?
It's not a matter so much of my wanting or not wanting. I had an injury to my hands, and I have too much arthritis and stuff and pain in my hands to play an instrument. And so I'm never going to.
Well, yeah. And it certainly hasn't slowed you down with 6,000 songs on your in your catalog.
Yeah, so. Really.
Well, and there's a hidden benefit, several hidden benefits. One is low cartage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can swim and lie on the beach and write a song.
You don't have to schlep a piano with you.
Yeah. Or a tuba or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also not limiting me to the... almost the cliches that people get into having to do with the sweet spots of those instruments, whether it's the timbre or the range or the open chords that you might normally find on a guitar, let's say, or some of the things that, or just limitations that I might have with what I could play.
Mm-hmm.
Since I can't play anything, I have... maybe a little more freedom.
Those restrictions are gone. And it shows, because when you played, there were several times in your melodies where I was surprised. And it was a pleasant, I was like, "Oh, wow, that was so pretty." And because it went in a direction that you're, I can see that now with an instrument. How on earth would you have gotten there as opposed to just being able to free your mind? And
especially if you're not, you know, a virtuoso and, you know, you've got your, these are the chords that I know and these are the things that I know how to play. You probably always tend to fall back on those.
I do.
You know, I think we all do in one way or another.
Well, speaking of your prolific writing, you say you have a lot of good little tidbits in your book about writer's block. Can you talk about that? And again, the book is 1,000 Songwriting Ideas. And I highly recommend that you all pick it up.
Well, on page 227.
We're laughing because I knew what page that was.
That says, the possible causes and solutions to writer's block. And then I just list a few. But the first one, for instance, on there was looking to expectations and perfectionism. Bar set too high? Lower it. And I think lowering your standards is one of the ways that is the key to my songwriting prolificity.
Good word.
Prolificity.
Seriously, I think that we do often kind of scare ourselves into getting hung up and having to be perfect about it or write a hit or something like that can really slow down the freedom that you really need to have.
Mm-hmm.
And that means you just have to get out of your judgment seat with respect to yourself. And you do need a critical mind looking at your work later and doing some perfecting of it. But it needs to occur after your generative part. Mm-hmm. So I think it's good to split your writing process into two parts. And one will be the playful, generative writing part of you and let that have free rein first. And then invite the more critical rewriting editorial part back in after you've had a chance to throw some spaghetti on the wall.
Well, yeah, I mean, that because basically it all boils down to turning off your inner critic, you know, because I fight with that one a lot. So, I mean, what are some other ways that you can shut that little voice off? I mean, are there any specific ways that you go about
exercises
to make that happen?
Oh, there are tons of them. a thousand of them.
Waha! That can be found in 1,000 Songwriting Ideas.
Yeah. I'll give one. That would be to maybe do some playful activities around your songwriting time. Carve out some time where, let's say, I wrote some songs, for instance, with a wonderful writer who's had a lot of success with, he's a staff writer for Disney at this point, kids stuff. But when we wrote together in Los Angeles, he lived near a basketball court, mm-hmm. and we would shoot hoops and talk about songs and lyrics and so on while we were throwing baskets. And or trying to shooting at the baskets, but so I would say that that actually playing as part of your songwriting, you know, getting in the wading pool, whatever might be one way in. Another way that I think helps is. If you give yourself some free writing, this is talked about in Julia Cameron's book, The Artist's Way, where she calls them morning pages. And the idea is that you just write without stopping, first thing in the morning, whatever. You just get some stuff off your boilerplate or something first and boil it off. And then maybe you'll go write a little deeper after you've had a chance to just kind of...
Yeah,
diesel your engine.
Yeah, you know, I actually years ago tried that because I had that book, and that actually kind of works. You know, you just start writing, don't even think, just keep writing, and you'd be amazed at kind of some of the strange stuff that when you read it back later, it's like, oh, I wrote that. Where'd that come from?
There's a book, that talks about. There are a couple of young fellows who their method is to write as many songs as possible. So they give themselves an assignment to write 10 songs a day, let's say.
Wow.
And then what they're doing is they're saying, well, and they have a writer's group that they're accountable to. And so they bring in their 10 songs. But everybody knows, since everybody's doing this, everybody knows that they didn't have enough time to make it perfect, as it were.
Right.
And so they let themselves off the hook just by the nature of the way that they speed write, mm-hmm. in a sense.
Well, who was it? It was Jeffrey Steele about a year and a half ago that said that he and Craig Wiseman sat down and said, okay, we're going to write breakup songs. We're going to write as many as we can in one day. And they wrote like 10, 15 songs. And he said, and 14 of them were crap. But then there was that one that was like, oh, well, there's something. But it was, you know, it was just, we're not going to edit. We're just going to slam through as many songs as we can.
And then another day, they were going to write, you know, bar.
Drinking songs.
Bar songs. And actually, two of his hits were from that day. And he's like, well, that's why they sound so similar. Because, you know, we wrote them
the same.
Yeah, the same chords thing. And everything. It's like, well, that's why. But, you know.
Well, also an exploratory attitude altogether, you know, like maybe you're curious and you want to see what, oh, you know, here's a new chord I learned on the guitar. Mm-hmm. Let me see if I can use it someplace or let me see if I can, what happens if I arpeggiate this chord? What notes can I pull out of this to make a melody? Or, you know, there's just a lot of ways in which you're just turning a corner to see what would happen. You make up some random thing. You say, okay, what does my phone number sound like if 10 is a 2 chord? You know? Or anyway, that's an example of the kind, I mean.
Just ways to open up.
Ways to open up, yeah, lots of ways.
You had also mentioned in the book, you have a neat little part about what your thought is as far as the competitiveness of the music industry. And
I think I called it malarkey.
Yes, I believe
malarkey.
You did. But I'd love you to talk about that because I've always felt that way as well once I moved here.
Well, I just came from an event that was very moving. It was one of the happiest and saddest events I've been to, which was a wake for Butch Baldassare, at the Station Inn. And so I was hearing wonderful music and seeing people around me, and I did some myself sobbing. And the joy and the community of that reminded me that that's what I really think goes on in the music business and in the songwriting, whether it's business or not business. The intent really is to write songs and to share songs and to accomplish various things with those songs. Yeah, one of them might be to make some money with those songs, but there are certainly, I don't think there are very many songwriters who would ever get much of a catalog together if they didn't have something to say or a reason to write songs that was not simply to make money.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, a lot of the songwriters we've had on the show, you know, they all say, yeah, I'd be doing this if I wasn't making money at all. I mean, I just love doing it. And if I was an accountant, I'd still be writing songs.
Right.
So, and, you know.
So there's that, you know, some people talk about it as a spiritual experience. And again, you know, you wouldn't have an art fight or, you know, a meditation contest or something.
I'd like to see that, actually. I think you just wrote a Saturday Night Live skit right there. An art throwdown.
Oh, no, he didn't use the wide brush.
Man. Now, you wrote about something in your book there that I found pretty interesting. Talk to us a little bit about a subtractive song and how that works.
Oh, well, there's a kid's song, just to give you an example. It goes, under the spreading chestnut tree, who would sit but you and me? Oh, how happy we would be under the spreading chestnut tree. And then it goes, the spreading chestnut
okay.
tree.
Okay, so you drop a word.
And so you drop a word, and successively you make your little gestures under, and you move your hand under as if you have this imaginary tree that you've created with your spreading your hands up over your head, that kind of stuff.
Sort of like bingo.
Bingo, only that's the an additive tune, I guess. Or
yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Very mathematical.
Bingo's subtractive.
Is it?
Yeah.
B-I-N-G-O? Oh, you clap. And, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Don't argue with me about subtractive songs, Hino.
I should never argue with you about math anyway.
Thank you.
So that's a subtractive song, but then, you know, the notion of subtracting melody there's a classical sort of technical term for that, and it's truncation. But it's basically that when you're modifying a little melodic motif, that's a little thing you can do.
Just take the first note off or the first couple of notes off and see what you're left with?
Or the last ones or some in the middle, whatever, yeah. It's a way of changing but staying close to home with a motif.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wow. I'm feeling so educated tonight because we've had truncated.
Yeah.
We've had prolificity.
Prolificity. Which sounds like a police album or something, you know.
We've had arpeggiated.
Yes, we did.
These are all, we don't really work in big words here,
yeah.
Lisa. You're
my head hurts.
You're really stretching our abilities here. I love that. So your first book was 500 Songwriting Ideas.
Yes, that was published by Mix Books, which was the publishing arm of Mix Magazine. And I believe they've closed that bookshelf as a publisher, but of course Mix Magazine still lives. And then this book, The 1,000 Songwriting Ideas, which is the first half is mostly what the 500 Songwriting Ideas is, and then an addition of 500 more ideas plus some an additional preface and some other material in there. And so that one's published, The 1,000 is published by Hal Leonard. But you could call it at some level a new edition of 500.
And how do we buy that?
HalLeonard.com is one way. Amazon.com.
Or just Borders, give her $20 right now.
Or it's yeah, I can just see it now. yeah, those are some ways.
Excellent. Well, we're going to be back with more with Lisa Ashman. You're listening to The Music Row Show.
Call your heart unreliable. Call your dream undecidable. Call your heart an unreliable fool. Call your dream unachievable. Happiness is unbelievable. Say it is until it happens to you.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. Brought to you this hour by Sam Ash Music Stores. We're here with songwriter Lisa Ashman.
That is so nice.
Please, we're listening to right now. It's a song called Until It Happens to You from her album The Planets.
Now,
it's very nice.
Lisa was telling us, oh, go ahead.
I was just going to remind folks about Pig and Pie, you know, especially all those big sporting events. I think there might be one happening tonight. Might be a little late to call them tonight, but still, any parties you might be having, Pig and Pie just has the best barbecue, the best food you've ever had. So definitely do yourself a favor and go log on to pigandpie.net and see what they can do for your next gathering. So back to Lisa Ashman here.
Well, yeah, that song we were just listening to, that's a song, and again, I don't know if we've touched on this too much, but man, you've just written so many different, pop, jazz, country, just all kinds of different stuff. And this song has been used in several movies, right? And TV shows?
Yes.
The one we just heard?
Mm-hmm. Maybe about 14 TV source cues, and really faintly in The Perfect Man,
mm-hmm.
starring Heather...
Locklear?
Heather Locklear and Hilary Duff.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what?
Hey, you know, yeah, that's right.
I'd kill to have a song in a Hilary Duff movie.
In any movie. Yeah.
Not any movie.
Yeah. Carrot Top and, you know, yeah, no.
I'd be happy with that.
Yeah, me too.
My co-writer on that song, Joel Evans, also known as Joel Ervold, has been extremely active and successful in getting lots and lots of tunes placed. He has something currently out in Doubt.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And starring Meryl Streep. And he had something in Sex and the City, the movie. He and I had something in Sex and the City, the TV series, a couple times. But we had something last month air in Bones.
Yeah.
Show. Mm-hmm. Yeah, couple tunes. One of them was called Goodbye to the Wrong Side of the Bed. And it was originally, we were thinking of it as a peppy little Latin coffee commercial. And I know a guy who used to buy music for Starbucks. And so... I've been collecting songs about coffee, thinking that one of these days I might approach them. And I did that. I approached him a few weeks ago, and he said, oh, well, we're not actually making CDs anymore. but they are making these little cards.
The cards, yeah.
And so I'm probably going to have some coffee songs on a card anyway, associated with Starbucks. But I've written... I wrote one with Joni Bishop called Buzzed that a number of people in town have been doing, Missy Raines and Annie Selleck, and Lindsay George just released an album this last Thursday with it on it, an excellent version. And so yeah, coffee songs turn out to be something that I'd like to do. And those songs that reference coffee or are about coffee. Starbucks already has a CD about loungy coffee stuff, mm-hmm. you know, like black coffee. But it didn't have what I wanted to hear, which was an album of songs that really get you going in the morning. Really,
okay.
Really peppy
musical
songs.
Caffeine.
Exactly.
There you go.
So that's the plan for this collection of songs that I'm working on to some degree. I wrote one last week about coffee, and as I was writing it, I was laughing to myself, thinking, well, you know, maybe it'll show up on a Starbucks card or something.
Hmm. That's a pretty neat idea to just approach a project that way. You know, pick a theme and come up with as many different variations on that as you can. That's great.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you about another project I have that's like that. It's I wrote 12 songs based on sermons and speeches of Martin Luther King's.
Mm, wow.
So since January was Martin Luther King Day month and Civil Rights month is a theme and so on. And I've had a number of choirs do those songs and
wow.
so on.
That's awesome. Well, listen, we're going to be right back here with Lisa Ashman here on the Music Row Show. Welcome back to the Music Row Show, brought to you this hour by Sam Ash Music Stores. We're here with Lisa Ashman, and that's Blossoms on the Almond Tree from her album The Sisters.
It's real pretty, too.
It's very
like
pretty.
That.
It's got a very Irish kind of feel to it.
I co-wrote it with Mark Simos, and it's one of many, many songs we've written. He wrote a letter at the end of my... It was stuck at the end of the book under about the author, and it brought tears to my eyes because it was just such a beautiful tributary kind of letter.
Nice.
And Mark has become a professor of songwriting at Berklee College of Music in Boston.
Cool. Now, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but I was wondering if you could touch a little bit on something we were talking about earlier, the kind of the difference lyrically in like pop music, where maybe the lyrics maybe aren't as important. There's a couple pop songs out right now that are catchy as heck, but they don't really have any words. It's just a lot of oh-oh-ohs and that kind of thing. Whereas in country, you know, you usually need to tell some sort of story, have a beginning, middle, and an end. And
yeah, I like to think of the differences in these genres as a thin section of a timeline. And, you know, typically a pop song will cover the moment, and it might be emblematic of forever. Let's say a typical pop song might be "I Can See Forever in Your Eyes," let's say, or something where you have an emotional moment and you're exploring that lyrically. And beyond that, you're not giving detail and so on. Whereas a country song will typically like to let you know what your dad or grandpa or somebody like that was thinking about the topic, as well as what you're going to impart to your kids. So, or the story, as you say, you know, covers a lot more time and narrative detail, and it also goes along with the line lengths. You know, typically country music will have a lot longer phrase rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
Than pop, but I like to tell this story about how if you're writing a screenplay in split page format, which is where on one side you have the camera directions and on the other side you have the dialogue. When you're starting to write screenplays, you write a lot of dialogue and not very much camera direction. But when you get better at it, you reverse those because mm-hmm. even though you're writing, you think it's literary, but it's a visual medium. And analogously, music is an auditory medium, not a literary medium.
Mm. Gotcha.
Wow. I feel so much smarter after this hour.
I do, too. I do, too. But I had the benefit at Orange Beach. I got to listen to her speak at a panel. And how can people see you, or do you have a website or anything that lets them know where you're at or anything like that? Or do we just have to maybe go through the Songwriters Guild, et cetera?
I have been, I've had a problem with my web page for a little while, but it's been under construction, but it really is about ready to be out again. And that was www.songwritingideas.com.
Cool. Okay. And in the meantime, people can get your books at Amazon, any bookstore.
Or HalLeonard.com.
Or HalLeonard.com. Listen, we want to thank you so much for coming in. We've had a great, great time tonight. We got a little something for you.
We do. We have a little certificate from our friends at Diamond Gusset Jeans and Global Motorsports. There's no car in there, so sorry about that.
So enjoy that. Hey, listen, everybody, stick around. We're going to be back in just a few minutes with Annie Roboff, a big... Also, another big hit songwriter.
You'll enjoy that. Tonight.
We'll be back.